Hi, everyone. This is Kyler from Feeding Matters. Coming to you on August 22nd is the 2025 Feeding and Eating Psychology Summit. This year, we're going deeper. We're hearing from more professionals. In fact, we're going to hear from all four domains of PFD, as well as the two domains from ARFID. And we're going to look across the lifespan, starting with neonatology and going all the way to adulthood. Most importantly, we're highlighting the lived experience. So if you want to come together with other professionals who are engaged and dedicated to serving families and children who struggle to eat while hearing from those families directly, this is your opportunity. We'll see you on August 22nd.
Presented by Feeding Matters with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hey everyone, welcome to Feeding Does Matter. My name is Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters. Typically, I am here with my co-host, Dr. Haley Estrom, but she is feeling under the weather today. So we are here solo with Emnet, and Emnet is one of our members of the Family Centered PFD Research Consortium and a just champion for her son, for PFD, for ARFID. And so we are so thrilled to have her on today to share her story. And so, Emnet, I will kick it over to you. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. Happy to be here and share my story.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, so it's always so interesting, really trying to have families share their story, because I often feel like there's just not ever enough time to share all of it, because you've been through so much over the years that it's hard to bring it down into a podcast. But for what you are comfortable sharing and what you would like to share today, please share your story about yourself, and we'll start there.
Okay. Well, about myself, I am a registered dietitian and worked with kids in different ways. But in talking about my son, he's been through a lot, that's to say the least. So in preparing for this, I was like, where do I start? Do I start from when he was, how he was born? And I think all of that has to do where he's at today. So
yeah, it builds.
Yeah, it just kind of builds. And as you're going through it, you don't realize what's going on, and, when I pause in these kind of situations where I'm forced to kind of stop and think back, it helps you kind of see the perspective, a different perspective. Anyways, so to start off, he was born at 32 weeks. And he was also my surprise baby. So, I thought I was done with two.
Oh my goodness.
Surprise blessing. He came at 32 weeks. It was very, very scary situation. So I won't go into too much detail with that. I think I'll get too emotional, but, needless to say, because he was born at 32 weeks, he had a lot of issues where he was born at 2 pounds and 4 ounces. And he was small for gestational age, obviously. He had intrauterine growth restriction. And he was in the NICU for almost 2 months. So that's just torture itself for myself, of course. But it's just very traumatic, obviously, for a newborn.
Yeah.
So I think all that definitely played a big part in his feeding challenges that he has today. At that moment, I wasn't thinking about that, obviously. I just need you to live, is what was going on in my head. And so that was very traumatic. And for those that know me, I don't handle anything happening to my babies well. Forget, all these things that has happened in the past 8 years. But even when my first was born, just anyone, if they seem to have a cold or any kind of sneezing, I'm like, get away from my baby. That kind of mom.
And yeah.
So all these things happened to him. It was just very traumatizing. continues to be obviously very challenging. But so after he came home again, he was very small, but still like very alert in a way. And but he was definitely developmentally behind. It was just really hard for him to kind of catch up as the months went on. Getting him to stay on a certain formula was challenging because he did have GERD, so just projectile vomiting, and it was very difficult. Just even at night, I would have to sleep with him right next to me so I can be there to make sure he's okay. And first couple of years were very, very challenging. So he walked late.
Yeah.
He did everything very, very late, like over a year late. But that wasn't my focus. I just wanted him to be able to feed. And then I'm like, we'll catch up to those things, you know, that
Yeah.
my focus. But so finding the right formula was very challenging in the beginning. And as a dietitian, also, I thought I can do this. But when you're going through such a traumatic experience and knowing the kind of person I am, some people are just made differently, right? Like they're just different.
Totally. Yeah.
But my family was just really surprised that I stayed as strong as I did during those times, and I thank God for that. But so it wasn't until about he was two again, he was gaining weight very slowly. But he was gaining weight again, not talking, and until today he does not yet talk. But and so the projectile vomiting continued pretty much. Like he would feed and he would vomit, and then he would kind of calm down, and then the next feeding would kind of he would keep the next feeding, and then again the next time he would feed he would vomit again. It was just back and forth, and it was just very traumatic. And so the GI doctor that I saw did different tests. My little guy has had so many endoscopies. I've lost them. And
Those are so hard.
terrible. They're terrible. But one of the last ones did give us a clearer idea of like what is going on, and we were able to find a solution that is helping him. And I'll get to that in a minute. But
Yeah.
so with a lot of the dairy based formulas, that a lot of them were not working. And so finally, with one of the GI doctors, my mom actually was there, and she suggested a formula that was plant-based, and that did make a difference for him. Prior to that, we did try antibiotic, a small dose, to see if that would help things, which it didn't make too much of a difference. But the plant-based formula did help my son. Now, I know that's not true for everybody, but it did help him a little bit back then, and so he's been on it ever since. And but still, we would have different issues. He would still every now and then maybe get a cold, a congestion, and that would kind of start off the vomiting. And then he would stop eating, he would stop wanting to drink, and then we'd end up in the hospital. So
The
several.
cycle of it.
It was overwhelming when I think back right now. Obviously,
Yeah.
things are still challenging today, but gosh, we've come such a long way, and so I'll get to where we're at now. But so after different hospitalizations for different reasons, again, I think colds and coughs just kind of triggers it all because it's all connected. He sees an ENT also, and ear infection started also, and so that didn't help the feeding process. And I think because of all the different vomiting episodes that he would have, definitely it affected his desire to eat, right? Or even if he would have wanted to eat, the fear is there of the vomiting,
Yeah.
and the esophagus is just so inflamed so many times because of this, and the hospitalizations and the IV and all that just creates so much trauma around food, that he's just had a hard time just kind of. So we're working on that, rebuilding that relationship, that better relationship with food for him. Anyway, so after one of the hospitalizations, we did end up doing an endoscopy that showed EoE. And so I'm like, why didn't we
I
catch this?
was going to ask.
Why didn't? And so it just boggles my mind how it wasn't caught before. So I'm not sure where to what to do with that, because in the beginning,
That's it's hard to look back like that.
It just, you can't go back to the past. So you have to kind of move forward, right? But at one time, they did say with he had delayed gastric emptying, due to a double pylori, and so I thought they were talking about different things as far as catalyzing or kind of, taking care of that in a scary kind of way. That I was like, no, I'm not trying to do more harm in his gut, unless it's mandatory. So thank God we didn't have to do anything with that. Another GI said that's not an issue. That's actually looks okay. So having second opinion really makes a difference is what I've learned. And then so again, going back to one of the hospitalizations, we did figure out that he did have EoE, and so that was just such a relief to know what the main issue is for him or what is playing the biggest part of his feeding challenges, and just such a sigh of relief. So we were able to treat that, and so we did 1 month of treatment, and then we have ongoing medication that he takes each day, and that has made a world of a difference. So since then, we've had very few vomiting episodes, and so that has been life changing.
That's
And
amazing.
yeah, so and then so when he does have vomiting, or when he does get a cold, it does kind of trigger different things. I have to take care of him in a different kind of way. So I just kind of keep an eye on that and try to take care of injuries that come up. But we were doing really well with that. And then at some about 2 years ago, almost a little less than 2 years ago, he does have autism. Very important information I forgot to share. So he decided that he did not want to drink his formula anymore. So, and that I believe was because of many, many things that were happening. I started working full time, and so I wasn't home with him as much. This is my opinion, okay? Not for anyone else. Everybody has. It was just I'm looking back to what changed. What changed that might have. Had something to do with this. So, and then he had some kind of stomach bug that was causing issues. And then he got also the like a cold symptoms, and he was kind of congested. So I think it was a combination of different things were
Yeah, a
happening.
lot of things all happening at once and a lot of poor experiences.
Yeah, and so I think when he drank, he vomited because of that does the congestion does play with that.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened because we didn't know what happened. We didn't know he was doing so well for so many years, and all of a sudden he's like, "I don't want to see that bottle anymore." And then we just panicked, like, "What are we going to do now?" Because he's not.
Yeah, your heart drops. Like that's your answer.
Yeah, because that was our solution was the formula,
Right.
and he did take a few things by mouth, but it wasn't sufficient enough to replace, his feeding just solely on the solids that he was getting by mouth. And I was actually at the same time that he quit drinking, the next day I was going for a conference for a few days. So I was not even there for those 3 days. So it was just too many things were happening.
Oh, that's so hard on you as mom.
It's just so difficult. And I
Yeah.
love the formula and everything, but I think it does have to do with the autism and where they obviously are relating, and we do too. All of us relate our experiences with something, and that thing for him was his sippy cup, that the straw cup that he used to get his formula in, and he's like, "I don't want to see that thing ever again." So that was so challenging, and that went on for about 4 months, and he obviously started losing weight. I tried
Yeah.
several different things to kind of get him to eat more. His energy was okay. But again, he was slowly losing weight a little by little, and obviously we don't want that. And so at some point it was almost 4 months and he got the cold again, congestion, and then he started vomiting, and then he just seemed lifeless. And I was at work and my husband called me. I'm like, "I'm coming right now." And I looked at him and I said, "We're getting a G-tube."
Yeah.
I'm like,
It's life-saving.
I'm not risking this anymore. And the GI had mentioned it before, but we were doing so well on the formula that he was, especially after the EOE being treated and everything, I thought we were good. But now I didn't have to ask anybody. I didn't ask my husband. I just picked him up, took him to the hospital. I went, I did you. That's it.
Yeah.
And obviously I really tried to stay away from G2 just because it just was so invasive and just it was scaring me, but I need my
It's a
little.
tough decision for a family.
Oh my
Like
gosh.
it is, it's a very tough decision to know.
Yeah,
And you listen to your gut.
yeah. And but when I saw him, I had already decided this is what we're gonna do. I'm not risking his life, just because of my fears, you know?
Yep,
And
yep.
I'm not the first one. I had to tell myself I'm not the first person.
No.
So, thank God, everything worked out and he was able to get the G-tube and oh my Lord, it has changed our lives again. And as much as I can't wait for the day that we can remove it and hopefully one day soon we will. But right now it has helped him in the past. He's had it now for about a year and 3 months. He has gained about 30 pounds in that time. And he's just another person. Like he's just, it's just,
Wow, because you can get all those nutrients in.
and it just gives your mind such a sense of peace knowing that as much as we've tried to get him to eat solids, I am not dependent on that. I know that he's getting what he needs through his G2. And it's just, I can't tell. I can't just put into words how grateful I am, just to have this, to be able to have, to have a G2, as scary as it was. And yes, it was challenging in the beginning. I was in bed with him at the hospital. I was on the bed
Yep.
with him every day because I was so scared about the whole experience. And
It's a surgery. It's scary for you, for him.
yeah, and I had such amazing supporters. My family and friends were just so amazing. And thank God we're in a better situation right now. He's on his G-tube and it's working great. And he is trying different foods. And we're just going to continue working at it and heal his trauma from all this experience. And I hope and pray that one day he'll be able to get it removed. But right now, it's just such a blessing. And
It's a huge lifesaver for you both. Like you've been through a lot of trauma, and to be at a place where you're feeling that sort of comfort from it is really huge because it takes that pressure off for you to be able to explore food in a way that suits both of you. Thanks so much for sharing, Emnett, because it is just, it's such a long journey and you've been through so many ups and downs within it. And that's why I wanted to try to acknowledge it at the beginning because it is, it's hard to even capture everything you've been through. It would take, I mean, so long to be able to truly share, like in the experience that you all have had. How was it being a, because as a dietitian, and then having a son where you're trying to navigate the formula stuff and the reflux stuff, how was like, tell us more about the communication that you had with your pediatrician when you were kind of going through that in the early stages, and then maybe what it looks like now.
It was very challenging because I more or less was, I think, in my mind, just thinking back now, I was just so overwhelmed that I couldn't even think about what I do know, what I did know, or what I was doing to help other families. It was more like, you're the GI, you are the one that's
Well,
taking.
that's what you have to be. You have to be a parent in that situation.
I
Like, you can't be professional. And that's what I see a lot of like parents who put a lot on themselves who kind of know both worlds and get stuck in that. And you have to be a parent in that situation.
And that's how I was in the beginning, especially. I was just like, what do you say? And I'll do what you say if you're going to make this go away. Like, if you can fix this, I will do what you say. And it was, yeah, that's where my mind was. I was not thinking about myself as a dietitian. I was more disappointed, like maybe not disappointed, not the right word, but in myself and like I should know what to do. I should be able to help him. The main first thing I did was wanting to breastfeed. So I really pushed that because with my first school, I breastfed until I was sick of it. Like, so I had to force them to stop. And so I really loved the idea of breastfeeding, and I tried to pump, and obviously he was small and different challenges, and that hurt me a lot knowing that I couldn't give him breast milk. So,
That's an emotional journey in and of itself, even just that one moment in time for
it
so many.
was, and it was funny because I did pump a lot and I stored, and then something happened with the fuse and all my milk was spoiled, and I was,
Oh, such a
it
gut punch.
was terrible. It was terrible because you know how terrible it is to have to pump so much and save. And I've been having to take care of him, and it was so after that, it was only 4 months, I believe, I pumped and we fortified it and gave that to him. But it is what it is. And he's such a happy boy, though. He just brings so much joy. It's just with all the challenges, just, oh, I just love him to death. And he just brings me so much joy. But so going back to being a dietitian, though, so nobody referred me actually to a dietitian. Until just recently, I was like, let me talk to a dietitian just to kind of bounce ideas and everything. So, because as the years go by, I think I'm more, at peace about different things about him. And I feel like I can do more for him. And so, but I was surprised at why a dietitian was not involved from the beginning.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially you knowing your profession.
So but I think the GI should have referred me to a dietitian from the get-go, I think from the beginning. But that was that. And so now that in thinking in where I am now, I'm able to understand what he is getting. I can assess how what his nutrients that he's getting and what I need to supplement with and all that. So I feel like I have a clearer mind to think more clearly as the years have went by to support him better. And I'm able to actually help other families that don't have as severe of an issue because a lot of families with kids with autism do have picky eating and all those issues that come with that, but maybe not as severe as where he's at. And so
Yeah.
it's amazing to be able to support other moms and be there for people that I wish I could have gotten that kind of support when he was younger. So where I'm at.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing. And I love hearing how much joy he brings you and just how fun he is. And so tell us more about him and where he's at right now, even just generally in life. I mean, he's on his tube, he's exploring food. What are some of the things he likes to do?
He loves outdoors, so he
Love
can
that.
run and just run on the grass, and he loves to go to the playground and play. And so obviously, as most kids, he loves any screen time he can get, but we have to limit that.
Yeah. As we all try to manage that experience.
It's challenging, but he is into planes now. I don't know. He was into cars and car washes.
Yep.
Car wash. So that's one thing. But he's into planes. And so we took him to a plane museum for his birthday. And he loved that. So that was interesting. He's doing well in school. Surprisingly, I've done a lot of like IEP meetings and things. And we've been able to assess him more. And recently he's in second grade. He just finished second grade. And he's actually, even though he doesn't actually speak, he's able to recognize all the words. And they just recently tested him from preschool and all the way to second grade, and he's able to understand all the words up to second
Wow.
grade.
Yeah.
Didn't know that until recently that he is able to recognize all the words and identify what he's being asked. So he knows so much more than what he's able to express. So we're kind of trying to tap in and figure out how to help him to be able to express himself in a way that he feels understood, and he's signing more, and he's making more eye contact and just kind of trying to express what he wants and needs. And it's just been a wonderful since, especially since the G2, because as you know, you're getting all the nutrients your body needs.
You
Then,
see some of the shifts kind of happen.
yeah, this past year has been really amazing. And seeing him grow physically, but mentally also. And I'm very hopeful that we'll continue to see more change. And that's where he's at.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing, Amna. It's really helpful for other families to hear how families have navigated this. I think it's so hard to look back and figure out, like, maybe I do this thing or this thing, but you have been such a passionate fighter for him and for you. And that's the value in having our families on the Family Centered Research Consortium. And that's kind of what I want to pivot to. You know, we're narrowing down on our time, but what has been your experience being on the consortium, or what in general do you feel like has this journey like been for you and even outside of you as mom?
It's been a roller coaster ride, a lot of ups and downs. But again, just having this G-tube has kind of kept me up a little longer. just, you know, because it's kind of a form of security, I could say, I guess.
It's a huge form of security. I feel like that's, you know, it's hard because sometimes tubes get used as threats, and families are faced with such hard decisions on that, like doing a surgery or not. And sometimes they're described pretty flippantly and in some of that way. But for the right family where it's applicable, it's so life-saving, and it's a safety net. You know that, like, he's even hydrated, and he gets what he needs.
Yeah, but and the consortium has been so amazing. I don't even know how I ended up on it. It's an amazing group. And I've just learned so much. And just being able to connect with people that understand you. So when I get off sometimes, I've just like I tell my I just finished therapy right now because sometimes you know, some sessions where we have where we're able to discuss you know, our journeys and what we're going through and hearing from each other, it just makes you like feel understood. Understood, and I love that, and I think I was in Feeding Matters mentorship a while back, and
Yeah.
that might be how I got into this. Because,
Sure.
and that was I love that you guys have that. I think it's such an important resource, and I hope to one day be able to you know mentor someone else and help them also. And I think one time you also had like a support group of some sort a while ago.
Yeah, we've done that in different spurts, and actually, we're trying to more formalize it. We're calling it our summer support series. So it's actually something that's going to kick off again. If you or anyone that may be listening needs some support, we have our not only the coaching program you just mentioned, our Power of Two program, but summer support series is a really, I think, helpful, because there's not a lot of answers. So you do just need support sometimes.
I loved it. I think it was only four sessions or something. And when it ended, I'm like, do you have to, does it have to end? Can it
That's the overwhelming feedback.
So, yeah, thank you so much for having those options for families that are in need of this. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. Well, I'm glad it's been not only a meaningful experience for, like, Feeding Matters and what you contribute from your own perspective in building what the consortium is building together, but I'm glad that we're able to give you the support and the community from it as well, because I feel like we're getting so much out of it in terms of where we're trying to, like, move the field towards being more patient and family centered. But it's really nice that it also has become this community of itself, and it's this support group of in of itself too, even outside our summer support series. So Emnet, as we close out, this has been really amazing with you, and I really appreciate it. And I know Haley's so bummed she missed you, but And I know we talked about this question before we started, that it was a tough one to answer. So it's okay if you give me a totally different answer, but we ask every person because this podcast was born out of the consortium in really trying to communicate, being more patient and family centered, and especially making sure they're patient and family centered is considered as in the research too. And so what do you think the barriers are to that research? And what do you think maybe there are like a maybe solutions might be too?
Yeah, that one is a hard question to answer. I'm just trying to think about what, well, I'm thinking that I don't think that PFD is well known or acknowledged in the medical world as it should be. I did mention in our talk one time about I know several people that are in the medical field that when I ask, do you know about PFD? And they don't. And they say, oh, just refer to GI. And so they're not given the right, guidance or information about feeding disorders in their education. And so I think that plays a part because, that's a lot of times where the research is going to come from, I feel like. And just like nutrition is very much taught in a very short, maybe they take a class or something, and it's so much more important than that. So the same thing with feeding. It's just it needs to be there needs to be more awareness. There needs to be more awareness in the medical
Yeah.
field, and the we need to advocate and really make that something that it's is. Recognized sooner and treated sooner. I think even for my son, they didn't, he never got a PFD diagnosis. It was diagnosed when I took him to get his G2. For that, they knew all the different things that he was going through. I'm going back and
And
forth.
still no PFD or even PFD turned into ARFID.
No. And so I think there needs to be an awareness and I'll volunteer myself with Feeding Matters any way you need me to advocate to make this awareness, to yeah, but I think there needs to be more awareness and understanding, and it needs to be implemented in the education that, in the medical field, that everyone should be aware of this so that when we do see something, when we see something, off with feeding, that there's a trigger to, in our minds, there's a reminder of like, okay, we need to assess, let's make an assessment and let's refer to the right, just GI. Sometimes I feel like they don't dig deeper, or they don't dig deep enough, and they wait, and they just, it's endoscopies are first thing, they just kind of jump to that. And yeah, it saddens me to think a lot of things can prevent him. If the medical, if the doctors that were seeing him were, that my son that is, were able to say, hey, there's something else that might be going on. Let's, do something different and kind of dig deeper. But again, it might be because they're limited too. They're limited in the times that they are able to see. So a lot, I think a lot of things play into this.
It's complicated, but I agree with you. More awareness is certainly needed, and there's a lot that we need to do to support medical education and specifically the medical community being aware of this. And that I think is a great answer to push. How do we like support patient and family centered research? Is if we can even get the medical community on board with this a little bit more, that'll also help move the needle a little bit too. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you all who are listening out there. If you do need support, please reach out to us at Feeding Matters, feedingmatters.org. We are here for you. And as Amnit was saying, it's that community that can help, and you're not in this alone. Feeding Matters Infant and Child Feeding Questionnaire was developed as an evidence-based tool to promote early identification of feeding disorders. Developed by internationally recognized feeding experts, this online questionnaire, available in both English and Spanish, can help you better understand your child's feeding differences and needs. Take it online for free today at questionnaire.feedingmatters.org. That's questionnaire, feedingmatters.org, or type ICFQ in your search bar.